and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
It is a wonderful, wild Wednesday here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. Maybe I shouldn't say wild. Maybe we can just say a lovely Wednesday here. Namaste to you, Feather Light.
Namaste. Namaste, Leslie.
Yeah, and peace, and greetings, and namaste to Scotty, and all of you that are tuned in here with us here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit. I think I lost you for a second there.
Yeah, I heard the
operator. Well, namaste. Namaste, Featherlight. How's it going with you?
Oh, splendid. I didn't know you didn't hear me.
Splendid. Oh, I love that. Splendid. Splendid. But you know what? It's a splendid March the 8th, and today is what is being celebrated as International Women's Day. It coincides with our Mind, Body, and Spirit show. But tonight we have an author coming on, Tony Caliglia, and he's going to talk about his book, The Black Ten Commandments. So, interested to hear what he has. I did hear a little buzz about this book, but I'm not very familiar. I have not read it yet, I will say. But we want to hear from him, and maybe you may want to order his book, maybe we will read it. Maybe we'll have a book club around it. Who knows? We'll hear what he has to say, Featherlight.
Yes, we will. Give him a chance to let us know what this is all about. It sounds has a very interesting title.
The Black Ten Commandments. Well, the Black Ten Commandments National Warning Order is the title of his book, and he will come on with us shortly to share some information about his book, and we'll have a little discussion around it. We'll have an intellectual discussion around his book title and some topics in his book. But you know what? I have to say this about this International Women's Month. First, let me just, I'm just in researching some articles. This is what I came across. As many people know, also women all around the country and around the world took a Women's Day strike. So many women called in and did not go into their occupations on today. And some said that they were not going to cook. I was like, not going to cook? Okay.
Almost they got to do it.
Yeah, so
okay.
What is International Women? Okay. You're not gonna cook today for your hubby. you're not gonna bring him his beer and cook for him tonight when you get home from working your 8-hour, 12-hour shift, just like he did. Okay, all right. International Women's Day is a worldwide event that celebrates women's achievements from the political to the social, while calling for gender equality. It has been observed since the early 1900s and is now recognized each year on March the 8th. It is not affiliated with with any one group that brings together governments, women's organizations, corporations, and charities. The day is marked around the world with arts, performances, talks, rallies, networking events, conferences, and marches. Okay. Now, this is just from Wikipedia, International Women's Day. International Women's Day, originally called International Working Women's Day, is celebrated on March 8th every year. It commemorates the movement for women's rights. The earliest day of observance was held on February 28, 1909 in New York and organized, get this, by the Socialist Party of America. Let's see, a demonstration.
And who might they be? And who might they be?
A demonstration of women textile workers began covering the whole city. This was the beginning of the Russian Revolution. 7 days later, the Emperor of Russia, Nicholas II, abdicated and the provisional government granted women the right to vote. March 8th was declared a national holiday in Soviet Russia, 1917. That has absolutely nothing to do with me. Women took off work today. But notice how, and this it says... this day started as International Working Women's Day. So notice how after the Trump selection and Hillary Clinton and all that stuff, so-called election, the women came together all around the world and had this mass march, worldwide march, right? Which is fine. I'm not saying anything against the march. That's fine. My point is, the whole theme of it initially began as what? Something about anti-Trump and being, he was misogynistic, and because they had these pink pussy hats and all of this, and women's empowerment, and women should be respected. I'm with all of that. I'm totally with all of that. And then when I started hearing some of the promotions for this upcoming day, Women's Strike Day, it was all, the whole theme and the focus was, well, women need to have the right to have an abortion. Women need to have the right to have an abortion. I said, wait a minute, do what now? wait a minute. So we're supposed to be on your bandwagon, on your Ferris wheel.
Again.
At your march, taking off, using up my days to march for women to have abortions. When did that become the theme of this so-called women's movement? The right to have an abortion. I mean, first of all, you're still marching about, you started in 1900s for women's rights, and we still marching? Really? And see, another point, this whole twist of what this movement is supposed to be about. At first you were against Trump, but white women, I think the percentage is 57% of white women voted for Trump. So
exactly.
I mean, you voted
well
for
over
him.
50.
Yeah, we didn't have those high numbers, not even double digits, I don't think, with black women. I mean, I really don't even care about any of that stuff, but my point is, you voted for him, so why were you acting like you were so upset? Now you all of a sudden, once you got everybody on board, we're pushing so we can have abortions. No, we don't need to push to have abortions. No.
You're not getting all my energy for that.
No, for that. And the reason why, and I'm one of those people, do what you want to do. If you want, do that. But, I mean, of course, I would say there are some other options. But my point is, if we're going to take off days and march and gather around the city, let's do it for Eric Garner. Let's do it for your uncle. Let's do it for Trayvon Martin. Let's do it for Sandra Bland. Let's do it for my grandmama that had to work, and she should not have had to work so hard. Let's do it for the young people that's not being properly educated. But you want me to march? Let's do it for the people that are enslaved in these prisons. Let's do it for that. I think they're having a march on August 19th for the slavery in prisons. But, I mean, no, you can't get me on board with that marching for people to have the right to have an abortion. I believe in women's rights, but I also believe in life. And you're not going to make me fit in one category and say, well, you have to do this. No. I don't think that anybody should be telling me what I should do with my body. And I do believe in children being able to have an opportunity. So that's just my opinion on that. And hey, Icy Hot joined us too. What's up, Icy Hot? How are you?
Namaste, Icy Hot. I agree with
Namaste.
You totally.
And what are your thoughts? Ladies, what are your thoughts about this International Women's Day and the this Women's March?
This is not my cause. Mm-hmm. It doesn't affect the African woman to me. I mean, Kiara Harris, Delta Cougar, women who are having their children taken away from them, stolen from them. We have a lot more issues that we need to be walking for or making a stand for. Mm-hmm. Then the right to abortion, when I heard that, I was like, okay, it's found. You got some more?
Right. And then another thing, too. So, I mean, why are people still marching for women's rights when that was like the first, executive order Obama came in with? That was his first bill.
Yes.
The Ledbetter. So what happened? So what, we're still being paid 70 cents on the dollar? Is that it? So if that's the case, then, I mean, maybe the corporation should be investigated. Why are women still having to demand for equal pay? So, I mean, I agree with all of what
the,
exactly. I agree with what you're marching about, but I'm just not getting out there doing that right now when we still have our people being attacked. There was a little boy, Ben Keita. I think he was Somalian. He was in Washington State area. Found hanging in a tree. So these young people, not just young people, but people are still being found murdered. And
murdered.
We still suffer from all kinds of discrimination and disenfranchisement. So if I'm going to march on anything, that's what I'm marching on. I'm not marching on the right to have an abortion. And I'm not marching on Trump and all of that because I'm just not doing that because we already know. Well, for me, it's just not for me. So whatever people want to do, go ahead on and do that. So anyhow, those are my thoughts. I just had to share that. And, of course, a lot of controversy, Featherlight and Icy Hot, was around the whole comment that Ben Carson made about slaves being immigrants. Did anybody get a chance to hear his statement, his first day?
Yes, I did hear that.
Conference. Yes. So he had to walk it back, from my understanding, and kind of explain what he actually said in terms of that. I have not had an opportunity to read his actual statement as he tried to clean it up. But I've been hearing some very, very interesting comments on how his comment, how he delivered that and what he said about his comparison of slaves to immigrants opened up a whole nother door to another discussion in terms of the separation of black people and immigrants, because there's been this whole, I guess, like banter between some black people and immigrants, I don't want to say immigrants, people that consider themselves Mexicans or of another descent or something. So there's been this whole push for black people to get on board and push and join in this push and fight, this movement for immigration rights. and to lump us in. Some people say to lump us in with immigrants, but we have to remember that we're not in that same group as immigrants. No. So I think that that's an interesting discussion and something that is worthy of some analysis and critical analysis and thought and conversations around, because again, we tend to get so caught up in so in other people's movements.
We do.
Like our struggle is over. And our struggle is not over. So, any thoughts on that?
Well, go ahead, Dr. Cougar. Is that Dr. Cougar? I see her.
No, I see her.
So, I was getting ready to say, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I was just getting ready to say, I just wonder who would say something like that, being of African descent, unless they were put up to do it by some white male power structure that had some ulterior motive for doing such a thing. And it's so unfortunate to see a black man of his stature, his caliber, of his education and knowledge to continue to do and say these kinds of things. I mean, I also equated with him, you know, having to walk back that statement that he made during the campaign while he was running for president, and he was still a candidate when he backed up Donald Trump's statement about they saw the Muslim people, Middle Eastern people, celebrating when there was this catastrophe, and he had to walk that one back, too. Mm-hmm. So he continues to find himself in situations that really diminish his stature at his great accomplishments that he has. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know what would make somebody do that. I'm just having a hard time wrapping my brain around it. Because he has so much to stand on and value for himself when he seems like he keeps devaluing who he is, like he has low self-esteem or something. That's my thought on it.
First, let me give you his response, his backtrack. Okay. After his statement, and he received an uproar over his remarks, someone posted on his Facebook. It was not like, okay, I get this. It's on his Facebook. Slaves were ripped from their families and their homes and forced against their will after being sold into slavery by slave traders. The immigrants made the choice to come to America. So this is his background. The two experiences should never be intertwined nor forgotten, according to his Facebook post. Now, he also made a statement talking about the Obamacare, the health care plan. He said in 2013, the Obama administration's landmark health care law was the worst thing since slavery. So
yes.
He used
the
quote slavery a couple of times. So I think that we need to separate his healthcare, his medical accomplishments with the person. Because the two should not be mixed together in trying to figure out where he's coming from. Yes, he's intelligent, obviously. Mm-hmm. He came up with this wonderful thing of implant and all that. Okay, but as a person, just close that other book. Just close. Mm-hmm. He is showing you who he is by his actions.
Mm-hmm.
So we should not say, but you, didn't you do the hot?
But you're being cursed. But you're being cumbersome.
You're not supposed to think like that. No.
But you know what?
No.
But did anybody get have an opportunity to hear Obama's speech when he pretty much said the same thing? We're a nation of immigrants and we're immigrants and da 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 da. Obama said the same thing.
I remember he said it a couple of times.
A few times, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He actually has.
To make everybody feel inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For what
you know what I always say, you can YouTube it. It's there. I watched it last night just to hear it again. But you have a spoken word for us?
Oh, my spoken word.
A quote of the week. Which one again? Which one will you share with us?
Oh, my quote of the week. My quote of the week is, when someone shows you they don't like you, believe them. I'm in the PSAP. When someone shows you they don't like you, and you could be a group, you, believe them. Believe them. People speak, their actions speak much louder than their words. There are oftentimes when a person is, quote-unquote, a good person, they may go to church every Sunday. They're friendly. They're caring. They try to be honest. And then they run across somebody who doesn't like them for no reason. I mean, for what? And they're puzzled by this, and they try to figure it out, or they try to change themselves or change the way the person feels. Or I can't understand it. But accept it. Accept the fact that that's on them. That's on them. That's not on you. That has not. Don't take it personal. It has nothing to do with you. But don't try to force yourself on them. But try to change the way they feel. That's how they feel.
That's how they feel. So let them feel that way.
Yeah, let it go.
You have to go on and live your life.
Yeah.
And people will show you exactly who they are and how they feel about you in your action, in their actions,
in their actions,
and their behavior.
Yeah. Right.
And
really, a lot of times, sometimes it's subtle, and sometimes it's smack in your face, but your heart knows.
I was just getting ready to say that sometimes you may not really want to know or accept what you feel or see, but when you feel that, your intuition, when you're good, and you just feel it, you just know deep down inside that something's not right, or you're unhappy.
Right.
Well, thank you for that. When someone shows you they don't like you, believe them. No, that's right.
Believe them. And if you're in a relationship with that person, it's time for you to exit stage left.
Exit stage left. I agree. Let's see. New healthcare plan. A lot of controversy around that. Sounds like a lot of madness and craziness. I've just been seeing the headlines pop up on my phone all day. Like, okay. Why can't people just have free healthcare? Decent healthcare. I think that's what we should have. So that's just crazy to me. Doesn't make sense. We can go and bomb countries and then provide free health care to them. Oh, goodness.
Right.
It's just crazy. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Sorry about that, bombing. How about the free health care?
Yeah, how about that free health care we have for you now? Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway, so moving along. Update about Keir Harris. Her spokesperson came on the show last week to give us an update on her story, but to share her story and to let us know what's going on with her and her children's situation. So we want to thank Brother Red for coming on and sharing her story. If you're not familiar with her story, just go online, Google it, or YouTube her story. And Featherlight, you have a PayPal? account for her?
Yes.
If people would like to donate?
Or you can, yes, also you can go to In the Matter of Tierra Harris on the Facebook. And they keep updates. They put updates up there on a regular basis once a week, I believe. Yeah. So check on that. So the PayPal for Tierra Harris, those who would like to support, donate, it's http://PayPal, I'll spell it, PayPal, /KIARRE. That's it. So, again, http://paypal.me/KIARRE. And also, there's a campaign, a petition going out, the same http://campaigns, campaigns.org/organize organize for .org /petitions, /free-d-children-of-KIARRE-Harris. So sign the petition to help get our children back and share it, please. If you are able to give just a few dollars, let's help her. A gentleman who stalked and killed Trayvon Martin raised close to over $500,000, and he kept asking for more. Darren Williams, the cop who killed Mike Brown, he raised over $500,000. And Daniel Holzclaw, who was accused of first-degree rape and sexual battery of 13 women of color, raised $7,300 in just 9 days.
$7,300, a rapist.
Yes, in nine.
Yes, in 9 days.
A rapist. He was convicted of eight of them. The other five, they said,
Yeah, the other five, they just dismissed their testimony.
Yeah, yeah. You did eight. You did eight, so you know the other five are legit.
Absolutely.
But we must not just talk about this. We must be about it. We must be, it's part of our liberation. Helping each other.
Right. And for those that are just unfamiliar, just very briefly, she began to homeschool her children, and then CPS got involved, said she was endangering the children based on a call from the school, and the police cops came by, tried to force her to surrender her children, told her she would either have to surrender her children or she would be arrested. So they arrested her, separated the children, put them in a foster home. The children are now with the grandmother, but she is now fighting a case for herself and her children. It's just absolutely ridiculous. So find out more about her case by going online. And also, when you go online, go on to Black Talk Radio Network and go to Black Talk Media Project, that is, and donate so that we can keep bringing these radio broadcasts to you live. Not only Mind, Body, and Spirit, but other radio shows like Tanya Free, Pando Radio, Abolitionist Radio, and many others, Black Businesses. I mean, so many great hosts on this Black Talk Radio Network. You definitely should go on. And also, you can go on to the Black Talk Radio Network page and join BTR, the Black Media Social Network, for yourself. So do that. Any more thoughts? You have a spoken word, Featherlight, for a tribute to International Women's? Maybe Mahalia has some. Okay.
Actually, I have a tribute to my sister.
Oh,
and we are international. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are international. So I'm biased because I'm of African descent, so I'll say this is for my sister. So black women face a different social stigma from other women. We sometimes wear masks just to fit in, or particularly in the corporate world. And there's a book called Shifting that explains how Black women have to sometimes shift from their true self just to be recognized or fit in, or sometimes they have to adjust who we are. We have to adjust who we are, and sometimes we forget who we started out to be. So this is for my sisters who go to the corporate plantation every day, whether you're in a fancy office or restaurant or wherever. If they can fire you, it's a plantation. Mm. Dealing with ongoing racism, sexism, there's plain unnecessary stress. Giving shade. Giving shade. I know you can relate right now particularly. Giving shade by some of your brothers. Taken for granted by some of your family members, even snubbed by some of your own beaten down sisters. All of this robbing you of your creativity time, your me time. Mm-hmm. Background noise, peace. This is for you. And I'm going to stand up for this. Usually I do my spoken word lying down. But I'm going to stand up for this out of respect to my sisters. This is called Standing Ovation. She dazzles them with her bright smile and her infectious laughter. She is compassionate, courteous, and kind, timid, yet bold and fierce, with an inquisitive, sharp mind. She is passionate about what she loves and cold to the bone when she feels disrespect. Her makeup is flawless, but what else would you expect? She is adorned with the most fashionable jewelry, not one piece acquired from a store. She monitors her physique and is quite careful about what she eats. She has a figure many adore. Her natural body beauty is exotic, with skin the envy of more than a few. Her hair defies gravity as it stays wherever she wants it to. Others spend thousands in an effort to imitate, and echo her attributes. But her lips, her hips, her firm, ample breasts are all a part of her native roots. She is light on her feet as she dances on stage and performs astounding feats with incredible flair and finesse. As the scene ends, she takes her bow and smiles broadly with absolutely no signs of inner stress. Clap, clap. Well done. But as the lights dim and the curtain closes, she returns to her dressing room, puts her big smile on the vanity, and cries. She cries. Give that strong Black woman a standing ovation for yet another stellar performance on the stage of life. It is more than speculation that she is the mother of civilization. Her lips made full and luscious, so you will remember her kiss. Her hips move in tune with the rhythm of the universe, with a sass you just can't miss. And her strength and tenacity is unmatchable. This she can claim, but mocked and derided by the thousands. She's the golden ticket to the rapper's fortune and fame. She is the least respected, least protected, and most ridiculed in the game. Even those who look like her throw dust and sand in her eyes. So after the show, When she removes her smile, she cries. Strong women cry too. But she has forgotten one thing. She has her own play. She is the director, executive producer, and star. She selects the cinematography, music score, and leading man. Extras out of tune can be dismissed at the wave of a hand, or more like the wave of a thought. How does she become an extra in someone else's play? How does she become a writer on someone else's Ferris wheel? And how did she lose herself and become someone else's perception of who she is? As she lays her body to rest and put the excess chatter of her mind in a quiet box for the night, she began to meditate and yoke with her higher self for guidance in her plight. When she heard a message so startlingly clear, as if someone was whispering directly in her ear, change the script. Change your thoughts. Change your thoughts. Change your reality. Your reality. Your reality. Curtain call. Encore. You're on. Namaste.
Namaste. Let me give you some snaps for that. Featherlight. We should go on Broadway. Visual poetry.
To my sisters. To my sisters.
Mm.
I wore those masks.
And so often we lose ourselves. I know I've lost myself a few times and had to find myself. Mm-hmm. So I totally understand that. And wearing the mask, how often do we do that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You walk through the door and you're like, oh, I can be me. Mm. We should be ourselves all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to all the time.
Yeah. And the mask that I tend to wear is sometimes especially when I was younger. I'm learning not to have to do it as much in my older years because I feel like, hey, I'm an older woman. I've paid my dues, and I don't have to do that anymore anyway. But just always trying to be the joyful person, having all that happy face.
Right. Yeah.
Bringing joy into the room, making people laugh and smile.
Yeah.
Why have to always be the one to cheer everybody up? I need somebody to cheer me up sometimes. Everybody always want to laugh at me, laugh at my jokes and stuff. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I was walking down the hallway and this guy said, smile.
Yeah, smile.
Do that on command. Insincere.
I'm always smiling, but I don't just walk down the hallway smiling like, you know, I'm in kind of in a daze or anything. I'm a very cheerful person. So I don't walk around frowning, so...
Yeah, but don't expect me to keep every time I see you.
I love that. I love that spoken word. Thank you so much, Featherlight. We have our guests on now. We'll get ready to bring our guests on. So if you are tuned in to the Mind, Body, and Spirit show, you can also call in if you like and share your thoughts, or if you have a question or comment, feel free to call in to 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025. And you can join in the conversation and submit your questions or comments to our guests. And let's just bring our guests in. Well, I wish I had some hand claps, so I guess I'll just have to do my own little hand clap right now. We want to welcome in to get it here. Tony Caliglia, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing tonight?
I'm well. Enchanté. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Enchanté.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate you taking the time. And we just want to hear what you have to share with us about your book. I thought this was a very catchy and provocative title, The Black Ten Commandments, National Warning Order. I do want to get into, delve into a little bit of why you, how you came about selecting that topic. But first, tell us about you. Who are you, Mr. Kentucky Man? I went to school near Kentucky. Couldn't wait to leave from over there.
Well, excuse me. Well, I got over 20 years in the military. Mm-hmm. I'm a retired Army captain. My feet got so bad they medically retired me. So I wasn't quite done. I was going to go until I was 60. I'm only 49 now. But, you know, you deal with life as it throws things, you know, your way. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on this.
So what made you decide to go to the military, though? I'm always interested in people choosing to enlist in the military. So are you patriotic, or was it for education purposes, or what?
It was patriotic. I didn't do much by way of education after, you know, sometimes. Most people don't use education. I mean, a lot of that's an urban myth, is that you got a lot of these young guys and gals, majority of them don't even use the educational benefits in the Army. I was a supervisor, and I was always trying to get them to use it. Mm-hmm. And they were not interested. Very, very small. Most of them don't even go to school or do anything like that. But I saw a poster about this. I didn't know what it was. It was Rangers. And I just saw the movie Rambo. And I said, I want to be one of those. I want to be that. So I joined. That's what got me motivated to join. I want to be like Rambo. I saw the poster. And I said, what is that? He said, that's a Ranger. I said, well, I want to be that. He said, well, let me see what I can do. Of course, he lied to me, and I never got to become a Ranger because he put me in a field that was completely opposite to the Ranger. But I didn't know any better, so that's what happens. So,
Well, why do you think he did that? What was the purpose of that? Have you figured that out since?
I know exactly why. These recruiters, they have shortage MOSs. They have quotas they got to meet. And they'll tell them, well, this month we're going to focus on these type jobs. And so that's what they focus on. And no matter what you say, they're going to try to steer you to that job because that's their quota. At the time, they have shortage MOSs, shortage jobs, shortages, you know. They had a shortage in painter repairment. So that's what he put me into. And it also said I wanted a bonus, so he said the only job that had a bonus was the shortages. And I didn't understand that. That's how I work. Now, technically, I could have eventually went on to become a Ranger, I guess. I could have left the unit that I was in. But it was really, it's easier said than done, because once you put in a shortage MOS, a shortage occupation, and you're given the bonus money, you can't leave that without paying that bonus money. You have to pay that bonus money back. That's the catch. Mm. And I found it out, and I was like, well... I was like, well, everything's going fine. I'll just stick with what I got, and that's what I did. But, you know, that's one of those things. It's not that he was evil, but, you know, you got to be, when you go there, you have to negotiate for yourself, and you have to know what you're doing when you go there to recruit.
I just think about how many people may not even be aware of having to go in and negotiate it. In such a way.
Right.
You just think, I'm just enlisting the service.
Yeah. Especially if you're young, especially straight out of high school. Okay. And both of my sons are in the Air Force now, so I gave them some advice on that point.
Okay. Military family. All right. Well, tell us about a little bit more about you and your life in Kentucky, and what inspired you to write this book.
Well, you know, I grew up in a normal black neighborhood, but, you know, in Louisville, Kentucky, the area I grew up in was pretty much was all black. Mm-hmm. Blacks controlled everything, and they were doing rather well in the street I lived on. But I knew about a lot of different people who weren't doing so well. You know, I didn't grow up in an area where there was a lot of guns and gangs and that sort of thing. So I knew about it. You know, I had a normal black experience. And then I was reading this article one day, and it talked about how, you know, Christians were leaving the church and they were going to the mosque. That piqued my curiosity. I didn't know what all that meant. So it caused me to read the autobiography of Malcolm X. When I read that, that caused me to keep doing a whole bunch of study. So I started growing and learning stuff, man. And after a while, I decided to turn this into a book, made this into a book project. You know? So that's what started it. It's just self-improvement.
Okay.
And then it turned into something bigger than myself, turned into something not just about me getting smarter and learning things. It turned into me wanting to help people and try to make the community better, the Black community better.
And so in helping, in your striving to help the community and, I guess, like, empower and uplift the community, so some of the content in the book is designed and geared towards that goal and mission.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the whole thrust of the book. Real quick, though, the title of the book came from a quote from Ozzie Davis. Yeah, Ozzie Davis. Yep, in 1971, Ozzie Davis, he was the Black Caucus there, mm-hmm. the very first one. And he said, give to us a plan of action, 10 Black Commandments. Tough on strong so we can carry them in our hearts, et cetera, et cetera. So I read that, and I was like, I didn't have a title at the time. I was like, well, there it is. There's a title.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the National Warning Order, why do you say National Warning Order? Those are words.
Well, in the military, because it's all written from a military perspective based on military principles, a warning order is something that we do in the military every day. And it's simply like when your mother would say, hey guys, we're about to go to town. Mm-hmm. Get these toys picked up. And then she'll go and start getting the keys together and everything. That's a warning order. It's letting you know that something else is going to happen, and you need to get ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's preparatory. It also means that there's a lot of things that we need to be aware of that are coming down the pike that are threatening and detrimental to us. So we need to get ready for that.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. Things are coming down. Now, I just want to ask your opinion on this, though. You know, so many people, especially after the election, I hear so many people saying, oh, my God, I'm so afraid. We just don't know what Trump is going to do. They feel they're very fearful of their situations and their livelihoods. How do you feel? How did the election or did it affect you at all? And are you shaking in your boots behind Trump being president?
No, because I'm not worried. The president is the last thing I'm worried about for Black people. Mm-hmm. I don't think that he is the issue that we need to be worried about. I think mm-hmm. that we need to be about many other issues that are far more dire than losing the White House, because the White House is going to be the White House. Mm-hmm. It's not going to change. It's going to be the same old thing. The same old,
same old.
We've got to work. He's not a king. He can't do everything that he wants, because he couldn't even do a travel ban, and they blocked that. So mm-hmm. I don't know. That's even encouraging. That they're going to check him at every step, just like they did all the other presidents. He'll be checked.
Mm-hmm.
Not God. Definitely. So don't sweat it. He can't. He's not going to round us up and kill us. I mean, he can't do any of those type of things. All he can do is very limited what he can do by the Constitution and what the other powers will let him do.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know. So it's not an issue.
Yeah, I think people are having this fearful experience, and it's just exaggerated based on it being promoted in such in these times, being promoted in such a fearful.
There's a lot of hype going on.
A lot of hype. And I'm just living my life, and I'm still staying on my path, as always. It does not matter to me.
Nothing's going
on.
You're still going to pay taxes. You're still going to have to, you know, live your life.
Mm-hmm.
He's so high up. He's, you know, it's not really going to affect you as much as people think it's going to. They got this healthcare plan they're rolling out and everything. There's only so much you can do, really.
Yeah, that is. So tell us your thoughts on Dr. King and Dr. King's dream and how this fits into your book.
Well, I analyzed Dr. King's dream, and although I'm all for us getting along and everything and all this good stuff, but, ultimately what his dream to me seems to be about measuring up the whites and getting them to accept us and getting them to respect us, and it seems to be all about what whites think about us. So I'm not into that. I'm not about that. I couldn't care less what whites or anybody else thinks about me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, when I say I'm trying to fulfill aspects of his dream, I'm not trying to fulfill whites liking me. I don't care. I've worked around them my entire life. I've lived around them. I don't hate them. I don't hate anyone. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that they're not anything special. I'm not impressed. They're just people, man. And I don't think that our whole existence should be about measuring up to white people and chasing after them to try to get them to include us and like us. None of that matters. How do you feel
Please
about yourself?
Accept me. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Love yourself.
That's an essence. Exactly. That's an essence. What the dream. I think the dream is talking about when I read it. That because he ends with saying, that's why I say dreams are for those who are asleep, because that dream ain't never going to come to pass because whites aren't interested in that.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either.
Well, if they were, they've had 50 years and more than 50 years to bring it about. And when my book talks, it's like a lot of tough love in there. And the second black commandment is, I had a saying, at first it was let whites go. But then I was like, well, let's say I'm a racist. Well, I'm not. But I said, we got to reject paternalism in all its forms. And Willie Lynchism is just paternalism. People don't understand, when they try to define it, it's a way of making a group of people dependent on you for everything and wrapped up in you and obsessed with you to where they're dependent on you for, So that's what religiousism is. It's about paternalism. Rely on me, depend on me. And that's kind of what that dream is talking about. Let's worry about what white folk think about us. And then it says, judges by the content of our character, not the color of our skin. But that's offensive. I mean, what's wrong with our skin color? That they need to overlook it.
What do you say to people that say, I'm colorblind, I don't see color?
Well, it's just that, I don't think they're saying they're not cognizant of it. They're saying that they're not going to let that stop them and we all prejudge, just to be honest. We all prejudge, everybody does. And for example, if I see somebody dressed up like a biker with a chain around his neck, I'm going to think he's a bad person. And I'm going to not want to be around him. And it's the same thing. We all have that in us. And science has proven it, that they don't use racism or prejudice, but they call it different. That's different terms they use.
Well, you know what? And I can understand that we may grow to a point where we prejudge people, and I think we prejudge people based on what we have been taught and, about a certain group or what our experience.
That's exactly it. Have. Yeah.
So, and it comes from that.
So go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just saying that it comes from that. And we tend to not allow ourselves to just actually investigate a person or a group versus just growing up maybe thinking a certain way about a group of people, which is quite unfortunate. But let's go back to what your first Ten Commandment is in terms of your book.
The first one is to seek ye first the kingdom of God, something a lot of people don't want to hear. But here's the thing, though. You know, you guys got mind, body, and spirit as the title of your show. So that's in the Bible. That's 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 23, where it says mind, body, and spirit. That means we're two-thirds supernatural. So it seems to me that if our soul, we have a soul, and the Bible says we do, and it endures forever, that should be our primary objective. That should be our priority in life. We should get that business straightened out first. And the scriptures tell us that how does it profit us to gain the whole world but then lose our immortal soul? So that's why that has to be first. And I am a Christian, so that's why I put that in there. It's true, plus also I'm a Christian, so I'll put that in there. That's the first commandment. Seek ye first the kingdom of God.
Okay.
Step one.
Seek ye first the kingdom of God. And I guess I could say to that also for people, would you say, like, let me see, look for a higher spirit, look for God, or look into yourself, find yourself, know thyself?
Well, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but where I'm coming from is I'm a promoter of Jesus Christ, so I'm talking about specifically being born again.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Or being born.
You may not agree with that, but that's just, you interviewed me on the book, so that's what it's about.
Okay. And
yeah.
So what if someone is more spiritual than religious, but they still have the same goals of liberation? Would they not qualify? Or would they not pass, you know, the first commandment? Could they move on? I mean, that would be a concern.
No, all it is just saying that your spirituality is something you need to be concerned about before anything else. So you need to consider where you're going to spend the eternity at if you believe in such a thing. And that's something you should put ahead of everything else. That's what it's saying. It's not about being disqualified. If this is something you can read or not read, you can follow or not follow. But from my perspective is that, you know, your spirituality and your soul is something that you should focus on first before you focus on getting rich in the world and all this type of stuff. You know, and I say why. You can die at any moment. You can die at any moment. My next breath could be my last. So the next breath could be yours. We could die in a car wreck tomorrow. So it's important to put your priorities in order. And most of us in the world, and in the Black community, you don't have a priority set.
Right.
That's kind of what
Black Rose was saying. Go ahead, Black Rose.
No, go ahead. I was just going to mention something else. But, yeah, that's what I'm saying, too, just looking into yourself. For some people that may want to take that in a different direction and looking into themselves, working on themselves, just as you're saying, connecting with your spirituality, yourself, your higher self, your inner self, however people want to phrase that. But it's just basically, to me, I interpret that as having some introspection.
Yeah.
And seeking to improve myself in some way. And that could be setting some different goals for myself, abstaining from something. So I look at it kind of like that.
Yeah, if that's how you want to interpret it, but it's important to understand that specifically what I'm talking about when I say it, you know, when I write it in the book, I'm specifically talking about working out your own salvation. And if you want to work on the other stuff, that's great too. While you're at it, you certainly should. But I'm specifically talking about being born again by the blood of Jesus Christ. So we could talk about the other commandments too.
We can move on to the other one stuff. But we'll go back to that after we take our quick break here at Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. And we are here with author Tony Caligula. Am I pronouncing your last name properly? Tony Caligula?
Caligula.
Author of The Black Ten Commandments, National Warning Order. And we will be right back after this break. Stay tuned. Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show.
Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
All right, and we're back here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. It is Wednesday, March the 8th, and this is National Women's Month, International Women's Day. And as you know, or you may not know, marches have taken place all across the country and the world for women involved in a march for women's rights. Primarily, seems like to me, they're promoting women having the right to choose for have an abortion, which I'm just totally against. I just don't believe in abortions as the push for something that we should march for. I do believe in women's rights, and I think that we should be able to choose to do whatever we want to do with our bodies and with our lives, but I just don't believe in marching so that we can have a right to have an abortion. I think we can march on some other issues pertaining to women or to what's happening in our communities. And that's why we're so pleased to have author Tony Caliglia here talking about his book. And this is a self-help book, The Black Ten Commandments. And how can people connect with you? How can people purchase your book? And how can they maybe meet you and get their book signed, if you'd like to share that?
Well, sure, yeah. My email address is tony.caligula@yahoo.com. That's caligula@yahoo.com. tony.caligula@yahoo.com. You know, as far as making contact with me and everything, I try to keep my location nebulous, but if somebody was to email me and wanted to meet somewhere and this sort of thing, I haven't done any kind of like book signings or anything like that yet. But if something like that would have happened, you know, I put the word out up in Kansas City somewhere.
All right, sounds good.
I'm on Facebook, I'm on WordPress, and Amazon.com. If you punch in the Black Ten Commandments, it's the only one. It'll come up.
Okay. And you're on Facebook, so people can just search the Black Ten Commandments.
Yes, ma'am.
You have a group page. I'll have to go onto your group page. I actually have not been on Facebook in a while, but I'll have to go on your group Facebook page. But tell us more about your book and the Ten Commandments. So we talked about the first one, so let's go on to the second. You briefly mentioned it, but let's delve into that second one and.
Okay. Well, the second one deals with the second, because I had to put things in order as I saw them, obviously. Mm-hmm. And to me, before we can really improve our community and move forward, we got to reject white paternalism. And we have to accept the fact that we're on our own. That's the second commandment.
Okay.
Because it seems to me that we seem to be completely obsessed with white people. Getting revenge on them, getting apologies from them, protesting them, demonstrating in front of them. Mm-hmm. And they don't, you've got to understand is that they're not interested. I'm not saying there aren't some that care genuinely about our predicament and our issues, but as far as them trading places with us or doing anything that jeopardizes their holdings, their position, that's never going to happen.
Anything that involves a certain group surrendering their quote-unquote privilege, their white privilege. So, no, I don't
precisely. Precisely. I had a little chart, drew a little chart in the book, you know, the scales, the old-time scales you use where you put weight on one side and it goes up and down. Mm-hmm. And I had a drawing in there. It shows white supremacy on one side, which is all the way down, of course, the heavy side. And black equality was on the other side, all the way at the top. And basically, black equality diminishes white supremacy and white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
it's a threat to it. Mm-hmm. So why would we say that a group of people are inherently racist and then expect them to help us to become equal to them so that we can compete with them for their limited resources, their jobs, their housing? It just doesn't make sense to me. The whole concept of it makes no sense to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not logical.
No one does that.
You know,
they would have a lot to lose. They would have a lot to lose.
And so they're not going to do that.
I think too. Also, just looking at this with some deep analysis, what we have experienced and the trauma, the years of oppression, I honestly believe, it's my contention, that we do suffer from a taste, a small bit of Stockholm Syndrome. And
100% agreed.
We have a little.
I'm not to that.
Yeah, we have a little mental illness going on, some of us, because of all the stress and the trauma that we have experienced, that's in our DNA, the stress that we deal with every single day, these feelings of fear that we have. And it truly, truly does affect us cognitively, emotionally, mentally, and physically.
It does.
So,
there's a whole chapter dedicated to talking about that. I'm not a licensed mental health professional. I'm not a psychiatrist. I make sure I make that clear in the book. Mm-hmm. But I can read the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, and I know what it says in there. And it says that you look at the symptoms, you know, by these different conditions. You talked about Stockholm Syndrome. That's definitely what's going down. That's one of the things going down.
Yeah.
And a learned helplessness is another condition.
Mm.
That's a bona fide mm-hmm. condition. It's called learned helplessness. And the best way to describe it is when you, I use this analogy a lot, because I think it's really profound. I read an article about this guy, these people, they took these elephants, baby elephants, and they tied their leg and put it to a post in the ground.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, the elephant can't move, right? You heard this before, right?
Yes.
And when the elephant grows up, what does he think? I couldn't pull free when I was a baby.
Still limited.
I can't pull free now. And of course, mm-hmm. we know the elephant can push a tree down.
Yes.
But he won't even try anymore. Because mm-hmm. when he's a child, he couldn't move. He couldn't pull free. That's called learned helplessness. You just don't even try anymore.
Yeah, you don't even try.
So that's definitely something else that's going on.
People give up. Yeah. A lot of frustration and apathy that people have.
Yeah.
For so many different reasons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
That's what they call the condition, yeah.
Yeah.
And not that I'm trying to, the book is not focusing on white folk, because my thing is that we need to just forget about them and just focus mm-hmm. on us. Mm-hmm. And I use the analogy like, you know, I had relatives that I would chase, and we all know people have done this. We've done this before. You've had people that you want to be friends with so bad that you're like, hey, what are we going to do today? That stuff. You chase them down, and maybe you were romantically interested in them, and they're not interested in you. And at some point in time, we got to realize that they don't want nothing to do with us. We got to accept rejection. And I chart that in the book. I said, we have been utterly rejected in every conceivable way. We've been told, I'm not interested. I don't want you living beside me. I don't want you going to school with me. I don't want you anywhere near me, if possible. And that's what we've been told. We've been completely rejected, except for as certain aspects of our culture, you know, athleticism mm-hmm. and our entertainment abilities.
That reminds me of the cover of, I think it was Essence Magazine. An Essence Magazine cover had an inscription on it. Everybody loves black people was scratched out and black culture was written.
They love our culture.
Yeah, so everybody loves
have a voracious
culture,
appetite
African
for our culture,
African history, voracious the art.
Mm-hmm. Like they want to
create creative developments. Everybody loves all of that. You love that elevator you use going up to those high-rise buildings, but you don't mm-hmm. love me. So, mm-hmm.
They want to sing the blues, or they don't want to live the blues that we live. They don't.
No.
I mean, they like being tourists. the tourists of the black experience, but they don't really want to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Everybody wants to be blackish, but nobody wants to be black. That's another.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They're culture vultures. They are really, yeah. Like this one brother said, it's like a rind. You throw culture down like a rind after you're done with it. You throw it down disrespectfully. Mm-hmm. And then you have, wasn't it Thomas Daddy Rice? You know, he's the guy that did the Mammy show and got on stage and did that blackface.
Oh, yes.
Well, to me, Justin Timberlake is a modern version of that.
Hmm.
You know?
I've heard him say that.
He's just a modern version of that, and he's just one of many people who exploit our culture, and then he had a little Twitter war with somebody. He didn't get it.
People say that about like Rolling Stones. Rolling Stones copied James Brown.
It just goes on.
Robin Thicke. I'm so glad Marvin Gaye's family sued him.
Me too.
The same old thing.
Yeah.
And was that song that
Thicke Kid did?
I don't know, but it was very similar to Marvin Gaye's.
It was pretty much identical to Marvin Gaye.
The name of it was Blurred Lines, his song, the name of Marvin Gaye's song.
Blurred Lines. He completely ripped off Marvin Gaye.
As long as you're grooving.
Yeah, I grew up hearing that song, man. When I was a kid, that song was always playing.
Marvin Gaye. I'm drawing a blank on the title of that song.
His version is Blurred Lines. Mm-hmm. It's blurred all right. He's blurring the lines all right.
Yeah, he blurred them all right, and for real helped him.
It just keeps going on. But the thing about it is paternalism. We just got to stop running to them. Hey, take care of me. Hey, daddy, and ask them permission. It's sickening.
And
Malcolm X talked about that.
Excuse me.
So many of us want the approval, not just the permission,
exactly.
But the approval as well.
That's what the dream's about. I'm sorry, it is.
Mm-hmm.
What does it say? One day, this is all we seem to care about. So of all the things to talk about in 1963, the final thing he said, he summarized it, one day the white man will learn to accept me by the content of my character and ignore my filthy, ugly skin, basically. I mean, it's like something's wrong with our skin. Despite our skin, to look at the content of our character and see that we're good people and will accept us. I mean, who cares? I couldn't care less.
Yeah, and you know what? I always try to think back to, like, I can say that, and I'm sure there were people that felt like that then, but when you think about the group as a whole, black people as a whole, during that time, when you're made to feel like scum of the earth, was that message necessary to help people? I guess maybe that was Dr. King's self-help message to people, trying to help people feel, well, no, you're not the scum of the earth. No, you're not this degenerate miscreant that this country says you are, this thief, this rapist of white women.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, we had Booker T. Washington that had a good plan and we didn't follow it. I mean, a lot of people call him a sellout, but all he was saying is like, look, when your head is in a lion's mouth, you got to kind of pet that lion sometimes, you know, and then when you get to a position of strength, you know, you build yourself up. Right now we have no industry, we got nothing because we didn't listen to Booker. All civilizations on the earth have gone the same route except for us. We wanted to integrate. We wanted to take shortcuts. And we abandoned everything we had worked for. We had everything. We had complete autonomy. We had Black Wall Street, which was burnt, you know, and that was burned down. But a lot of many, that's just an example of many communities that were self-sustaining. We abandoned all that for integration.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that segregation is something that we should seek to implement in our lives as Black people now? Did integration harm us or help us?
Yeah. I'm not a segregationist, of course. I'm not a separatist. I'm just saying that I know that America has they would always return to a default configuration. It's like when you look at our history, it's like a kid that scoots close to the little girl, and she scoots away. He scoots three steps closer, she goes four steps away. And it's like a chess match. You look at our history, and we're just chasing white people all around the board. We move into a neighborhood, and they call it white flight. They get out of there. We go to their schools, and they're getting out of there. They're fleeing those schools. They created the suburbs to escape us. They created the suburbs to avoid us. And then they priced us out of it. And dare us not to come there under threat of death. That's how we became inner-city people. They used to be inner-city people, whites. Mm-hmm. They used to live in the projects. We moved in. We came in, they moved out of the projects and ran. We took them over. They don't want to live around us and be around us, generally speaking. I'm generalizing here, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know? But I'm just based on the track record in history, and that's why I say, look, just stop. Reject the paternalism. Stop seeking permission. Stop coming up with bilateral solutions. Come up with unilateral solutions. Solutions that don't involve white society or the government programs and anything. And we've got $1 trillion we spend annually. We have all the resources we need. You don't have to hate white people, but you can stop begging them and stop making them feel like they're important, because that's all you're doing. All this march and the protests, they just feed off of it.
And so with your self-help book, you have some solutions versus the marching, because some people do want to take other actions other than marching. But we have a question. Let me bring in Scotty. Scotty, you have a question?
Yes, ladies, how are y'all tonight?
Peace, Scotty. Namaste.
Namaste,
I'm well.
Scotty.
You?
Namaste.
Scotty.
I have a question for Tony. Thank you for joining us tonight. My question is, how do we end slavery in America?
Sir, your question is, I can't hear it right now.
So my question was, how do we end slavery?
How do you end slavery?
Yes.
You mean the slavery we got going on today? Slavery of the minds? Psychological?
No, I'm talking slavery? About chattel slavery.
Yeah.
Okay, I just got bits and pieces of that because somebody...
Yeah, he said, how do we end slavery? Slavery that is extant today, that is existent today.
Yeah, as we know, there's still slavery going on.
Chattel slavery.
Yeah.
So his question is, do you have any thoughts on how we can end that? How do we eradicate slavery?
Slavery in the world. Look, I'll tell you one thing, is that we know there's a lot of bad stuff going on all around the world, okay? You got little white people, white girls and boys, who are becoming sexual slaves in the suburbs.
That's not what I'm talking about, Tony. Let me clarify.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm talking about...
You got it going all around the world.
I'm talking about the 13th Amendment has an exception clause that says that they can put you into slavery if they convict you of a crime. That's why I'm not talking about any kind of metaphorical slavery of the mind or slavery that's already illegal and you'll go to prison for enslaving someone and holding them as a sex slave. I'm talking about corporate slavery. I'm talking about where they have you in prison working for Fortune 500 companies for slave wages, if they give you wages at all. The United States has the largest prison slave labor force in the world. So my question again, sir, is how do we end slavery?
Okay, the best way to end that type of slavery is not through crimes.
Not through crimes?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about corporate slavery, where you're talking about in the prison system where they're privately owned, or are you talking about...
I'm talking about all of it. The state, the jails, the prisons, whether they be private or owned by the federal government. So you're under the impression that everybody that's in prison committed a crime.
They've been convicted of a crime. Obviously, people are being convicted unjustly. So I'm not that dumb to say that. So I wasn't saying that, obviously. I have a brother in prison, by the way, okay? He's guilty. But I know a lot of people are in prison, and they're not guilty, obviously. So I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if you – there's different ways to go to prison, and different types of prisons. Well, if you go into the prison where you go there because you go before a judge, because you're accused of a crime, you know, a lot of people are guilty. If they're guilty, don't do the crime. If you're not guilty, hey.
So slavery's okay if they are guilty of a crime.
I've been before a judge for a crime, so I wouldn't know about that. Imagine the 49 years and not be arrested for a crime.
So, well, I've been arrested several times, but I've never been convicted.
Maybe they need to hang around the wrong people, brother. I don't know.
Never mind. Thank you, Black Rose.
That are caught up in the criminal justice system because of the monetary benefits that many judges and corporations receive through people being incarcerated and enslaved. So it's not all about people just committing different crimes.
Well aware of how corrupt the system can be. I'm well aware of it.
So you don't have an answer on how to end it.
I can't really speak to that. But as far as working for corporate America and being a slave there, I mean, what alternative do we have? We didn't.
That's not what I'm talking about, sir. Fortune 500 companies contract to use prison labor.
Okay, I know about those type of prisons. I read about that. So I don't have a solution to end those.
Okay. That's an honest answer.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't have all the answers. I'm not God. But I know that, and that's why at the end of the book, as I keep saying, and no one seems to understand, is that it's a warning order. It's a tentative plan. You're Moto, you know that. It's a tentative plan. That means that it's not complete. It's something that you say, hey, these are some issues we've got to work on. Let's come together and come up with a more complete plan. The book calls for, at the end of the book, I'm saying, hey, look, I need help. I don't have all the answers, and I only know I'm only good in one area. I'm a subject matter expert in one area that I know of, religious education. But there's so many other areas we're going to need help in. We need a round table of subject matter experts who can answer that question better than I can.
Are religion-based because with the first commandment, and I do want to just, I would like for you to just go through briefly all of the commandments, but your solutions are pretty much, I guess we could say, biblical or religious-based, or no?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay.
And I have no problem with that, obviously, because that's who I am, but... No, a lot of them, let me read them all to you here. A lot of them are just straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me pull this up. I'm going to read them all off to you here, okay?
Okay, great.
Then you get a gist of what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. We talked about the first one, okay? Then we talked about the second one. Stop mm-hmm. obsessing on whites because you're not going to get, nothing's going to come out of that. Okay? We can't focus on ourselves. We focused on chasing somebody else and being accepted by them. All right? And then, excuse me. And then the next commandment is, okay, support and defend the nuclear family. Now, why do I say nuclear family? Well, because even if you don't look at it from a religious point of view, all civilizations that ever amounted to anything had nuclear families. It's just a fact. And we talk about African culture, those Egyptian civilizations, those pharaonic families, they were all nuclear. So apparently there's something to it, you know. And then
what
that's
do you mean
that's
nuclear?
Man, woman, children. A traditional family. Now, it doesn't mean that other configurations don't work. Obviously, we can make it work. We can make you know, but that is the traditional, historically, throughout the whole world, not just in American history, world history, that has always been the configuration that has worked best. Okay? And then the number four, be about our Father's business. Number five, engage in faith-based social entrepreneurship. You got some spirituality about yourself. Without that, you end up doing a lot of corrupt things. Sometimes you can do corrupt things with spirituality, but, you know, I'd rather have some spirituality about myself than none. And social entrepreneurship, three P's. People, planet, profits. All capitalism is an evil. Number six, always strive to upgrade our dysfunctional cultural values and image. Number seven, continue to use the courts for advancement. Number eight, develop real black power and produce what we consume. Number nine, always strive to be an ambassador of reconciliation. And number 10, pursue global leadership. Everybody wants to talk about Pan-Africanism? Well, we're not ready for that. We've got a lot of work before we get there. We can't even have our own communities. How are we going to talk about Pan-Africanism and trying to fix other countries and join up with other countries that are worse off than we are? We can't even have our own community. So I had to prioritize it. You start small and you build yourself up. You crawl before you can walk. In the military, we call it crawl, walk, run. So these are issues that need to be focused on. These are things that, in my opinion, that need to be a priority.
You know, now on that last one, I have to say that I think that it's a good idea for us to not only build within our small communities, which we've been doing, our smaller communities, which we've been doing. I think since we've been in different areas, parts of the world, but I think that uniting with our brothers and sisters on the continent and abroad, diasporic people, period. I think that uniting those forces and their power, I think that that will give us the strength to persevere and uplift ourselves even more so.
Well, I have to agree with that. But here's the thing, though. What's easier, to lift up our own black community or to help lift up an African community? An African continent.
I think that all of us working doing that wherever you are will then flow into the larger river or the larger sea of us empowering ourselves. So if we all, like when people say you work on your home, your street, your community, your city, mm-hmm. your state, mm-hmm. and expand from there. So, I mean, I agree with exactly what you're saying, like focus on building ourselves, but also in the same time, I think that we're so talented, we can still work on building ourselves and still connecting and building those relationships.
You mean do it concurrently?
Yeah.
If you want to do it concurrently, that's fine, but mm-hmm. here's the thing, though, you know. To me, I got to get my family straight, my household straight, before I worry about the neighborhood.
So what about for those people that feel like, we are at that point. We're working together. We've united, because I know that there's some communities that have united, and they feel like not only are we working and building bridges with other people on the continent, but we're leaving this country and we're going over there with our brothers and sisters, and we're going to help rebuild.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, though. I mean, we've been over here in America, North America, for how long now? I don't see the Africans kicking the doors down to get over and help us out. And they kind of help keep us over here, too.
I can educate you on that.
There is a man.
I'm not saying anybody's not doing it. I'm saying that not on the scale that it needs to be on, apparently, to get us in a better position. We've been on our own this whole time.
There were many people in Ghana that were welcoming African Americans. I see all kinds of videos, even from Johannesburg, South Zania. People on the continent are welcoming us to come there.
And loaning us money, Black Rose. There is
I have a friend from Cameroon, oh my God. Yeah. They're always saying come here. I have friends in Ghana. They do welcome us. I don't agree with that one now.
Well, I just don't feel that during our civil rights movement, I didn't see many Africans really coming over here and on large scales and helping us do anything. We pretty much did it all on our own.
Because you know what? During that time, they were still under colonial rule and many of those
African countries.
Fighting
for their own independence.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, did you say something, Scotty?
No, I was just saying, you're right. They were fighting for their own independence. You know, the CIA was over there assassinating people like Lumumba.
They were kind of preoccupied.
And what have you. But so, I just wanted to say that there is a black billionaire.
First, before they could help us out.
There are black billionaires on the continent of Africa who launched programs this year to loan African Americans money. You got to submit a business plan. So this is my thing. There's a lot of stuff that's going on that you're not going to know about unless you plugged into the right sources to know about them. You're not going to learn about it from the white man's media, from corporate media. They don't want you to know. They don't want them bridges to be built.
Yeah, I know about that. You know, they don't portray us as seven cities over there still.
What was that?
One of the goals of this country is to keep us in that mindset that you're speaking of. Those brothers over there, they're not a part of me. They got their thing going on over there. We got our thing going on over here. And then we'd just constantly be divided. Divide and conquer. That's always been the goal. That's always been number one, divide and conquer. I'm not African. Yep. I'm American. Okay? That's the mindset of a lot of our people. Who are of African descent.
Yep.
Separatism from
here's the thing, though.
That's where we come from.
Yep. So that's why I had that in there, the 10th commandment, is that when we're at a position where we can better help ourselves and help others, then we can delve into that full speed ahead. I don't feel we're there yet. That's just my opinion. So.
Okay.
And you can say that they were taking care of that business, and they couldn't help us in the civil rights movement, but that's exactly what I'm talking about we need to be doing. It's like they were trying to handle their business first before they could help us. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, I actually didn't say that they were trying to handle their business. I said that they were under colonial rule.
Exactly. They were not able to render aid.
Well,
to us,
actually,
like
they were, Tony. There were some who were.
I don't think we're capable of rendering aid to anybody.
Actually, there were some people who were. You said you studied Malcolm X. Then you know Malcolm X went on a tour of Africa speaking to African leaders, building that bridge for them to support us in the UN. That's one of the reasons why they killed
him. That's in my book.
Yeah, that's why they killed him. So it's like every time, I just think, Tony, I don't know if you mean to be or whatever, but you come off harsh on black folks, man, and you're not taking a lot of stuff into context. They murder our leaders, man. They do a whole lot of stuff to us institutionally that don't let but a few of us so-called quote-unquote achieve the American dream. There's a lot of stuff that we could be doing and would be doing if they would get out of our way and quit sabotaging what we're doing.
Well, Scotty, look, I might come off harsh. You know why I come off harsh? It's because I, unlike most of the black leadership out there, I really do believe in us. I think we can do better. I don't think that we could make all these excuses that somebody's keeping us from doing anything, because I think we're more powerful than that. I think that we stop focusing on white people and protesting them and resisting Trump for 4 years. I think that if we focus more on our own community and fixing ourselves, that we can do it. I believe we can.
Well, those people are focusing on their community, Tony. They trying to get the slave catchers off their back and to stop gunning down our children in the streets. That's why they out there marching and protesting. What should they do? Be on their knees in their closet praying for the sky god to come in and stop the bullets?
So you're saying that protesting is actually going to change something?
I'm saying I don't judge people and talk about other black people who are trying to do
strategies in marching and begging, man. They don't care.
They're not marching and begging. They're not marching and begging.
Who are they petitioning then? Are they petitioning black people?
They're petitioning the government that they pay taxes to. That's who they petition.
Doesn't care about us. You just said it yourself. So what's the point?
Can I say something for a second on that?
And we gun down a lot of black people ourselves, too.
Here come the anti-blackness.
I see how they please. Gentlemen, I see how it wants to speak.
I just wanted to say this. You know, when Scotty first posed the question to the brother, I was thinking like, wow, that is an awesome question to ask. And the thing that popped into my mind was that, you know, actually both of you have great points. I'm kind of like in agreement with both of you. So this is the way I'm looking at the question that was posed and the answers that could come out of it. Number one, we always need to, it's no silver bullet, but we have to use different strategies, various strategies. Those individuals, because I'm old enough, I went to the first civil rights movement. We did the, you know, stuff with tear gas and running from that and the civil rights movement. But bottom line is you need some visibility to bring things to the point, media point, or the awareness, which will be the protesters that are walking, which tend to be the younger people. And the other aspect of that is, I think we, and that's why I thought you was going to say, brother, we've got to change the laws and the policies. If we don't change those laws and those policies, which means getting into the government, we know they don't care, but we have to put policies in place that counteracts the corporate greed. We have to put those in place because as we even speak now, these fat cats are putting all these policies in place to further enslave all of us. Yep. So the protesters, the part that really ticks me about the protest, the march thing is, what is the end result? Can you turn that march into a law that will actually benefit and help us to become better?
Most of the protests, they don't have any real plan to them. They're just out there frustrated. They want to go out there and make a scene. And this reminds me of something that Roy Wilkins was saying to Dr. King. You know, a lot of people think they got along wonderfully, but, you know, the Big Six, they had a lot of issues, okay? They were not getting along wonderfully. And Roy Wilkins said to Dr. King, he said, one of these days, some real smart reporter is going to figure out that your Montgomery boycott didn't accomplish nothing. It was Thurgood Marshall quietly fighting in court that got the job done.
And that's what I'm saying, okay, is that we got to do that.
Let me say something.
And I'm saying that that march, those marchers ought to have an end result of changing policy. That's exactly what I'm saying.
If they did, maybe I'd support them more, yeah. All I say
is just a bunch of stuff. The benefit, can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello? Okay. The benefit of the marches, in my opinion, is the media attention, worldwide attention, and embarrassment. America hates to be embarrassed, for one thing. But we are such a creative people. We do not have to put all of our eggs in a basket. We could have facets. This group over here does this. This group is coming up with a plan from what they're doing over here. Everybody shouldn't just march. You got thinkers, you got people who could be doing other things. But this marching could have its own own special effect. For effect, I think it is important that we have different facets, not just, okay, well, for the next 10 years, we're going to march. Like you said, Mother Hattie, and then what? So we could be doing other things.
Precisely.
Yeah, that's what I said. There's no silver bullet. We got to use all different kind of strategies, and I think all of it is very, very relevant. But the policy piece and the laws put in are the things that I think are critical to go along with this.
If we're going to live in this country, yeah.
Here's the thing, though.
Can y'all get an end result to your marches here that's going to place?
They never have a clue what they're doing. But number seven says continue to use the courts for advancement. You know why I said that? It's because I know Scott doesn't think I did my homework, okay, but I did. And I studied the history of the whole black thing, the whole black community in North America. And if you look at the civil rights movement, and the leadership, Warren Wilkins will tell you this, you know, if you were to interview him, he said that the only thing that made a difference was Thurgood Marshall of the NAACP in court. It was court that got us all of our freedoms. What kicked off the civil rights movement in 1954? It was a court ruling that Thurgood Marshall won.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Do you realize that we don't even give him the respect he deserves? We don't.
Well, you just said that integration killed us.
People went on strike and did not trust.
But
that hurt the economy as well.
But you just said, Tony, that integration killed us. But Thurgood Marshall, that's what that court case was about. Brown versus the Board of Education.
It has to have its steps to get to the court, right?
And Dr. King had a reason for marching in Featherlight. You hit it right on. It was a strategy. And it was a reason they used young people. They used teenagers and they used college students. They didn't want them old people out there getting bit up by dogs and hit with fire hoses.
Right.
Martin Luther King said they were using the media. They wanted the images of how brutal these people were.
Right.
And they wanted those images to go out worldwide so they could build international support. So it was a purpose of those marches. Then why are you playing it down, Tony? Like all they was doing is out there marching for their health.
They didn't care.
I do. I don't think they care either. I don't think so. Because if they care, they're going over the world and they're doing the same thing today.
It doesn't have anything to do with care. I didn't say they cared. They never cared.
I don't think they're embarrassed. I don't think they're embarrassed. Well, they have been before, but I'm not sure about now.
But, yeah, they have been embarrassed before.
We embarrassed them, but they didn't show the embarrassment, apparently. Not enough to make any changes because the movement kept going on for another 10 years. Funny thing about that. That's a strange embarrassment.
Well, you know, they did kill. They did kill.
No shame to their game. These white male power systems have no shame to their game.
We want to give all the glory to Dr. King and no credit to Thurgood Marshall, the guy who the reason why we're free now is Thurgood Marshall.
We ain't free. What are you talking about, we free? And Thurgood Marshall, you contradicting yourself, Tony. Thurgood, you said integration killed us.
We were in 1954, man. That's what I'm saying, okay?
You said integration killed us, right?
That's precisely why we got to change our strategy.
You said integration killed us. That's Thurgood Marshall's legacy. That's his legacy.
Choices, because you go in and you integrated with the school system, and your children walk through that door, they're doing the same thing, separating them out once they get in the door, and they will not educate them. They throw the babies into special education, and it gives them the license not to educate them. So I don't know that it really did us a heck of a lot of good. We just need our own stuff, our own self-determination.
That's what I'm talking about, man.
That's what we need. And people should have a choice. If they want to integrate, that's awesome. Do that. You got to have all kinds of strategies and people doing all kinds of different things. But we've got to get some structures in place for us.
Thank you. And that's all I'm talking about here. Do you realize they resegregated us? Pretty much all the gains we got from desegregating America, we've been resegregated quietly. We're right back to where
it never did get integrated because if they wanted it integrated, it would have started not in the school system, but it would have started in housing because those are the neighborhoods. That's where your assets are, real estate, real estate.
I'm sorry, guys. No. We need to close.
Okay.
Yes, and it looks like this needs to be a part two because there's still a lot that hasn't been expressed. But we thank you so much for coming on. You shared quite a bit as information for us and as well as the listening audience. And for the participation, I appreciate that. It shows that we all have thoughts on the different issues, and it's interesting to actually hear them based on our experience and our beliefs and what have you. So thank you thank so, you so much. Much.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
We appreciate it. Great conversation okay. and dialogue. Thank you so much. Now, how can people catch your, follow you or purchase your book again?
For the books on Amazon.com, The Black Ten Commandments, National Warning Order. My email is tony.caligula@yahoo.com. Mm-hmm. And I got WordPress. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter as well. So that's how you can get me.
All right. You have a good night, and thank you so much.
Thank
Peace.
You. You too. Uh-huh. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
All right. And that was Tony Caligula, author of The Black Ten Commandments. What some interesting thoughts on the Black Ten Commandments? Some I can see, and some I may have a few questions about. But I think that it's great when we can have that open dialogue, and I do think that we can have different strategies on how to gain our liberation. But for right now, Brother Light, you have a Love the Body for us.
Yes, I do. I do.
Okay.
I think I don't need to explain why. So if you need to, if you got a minute, pull out a pen and paper, because you might want to jot down some of this information that I'm about to share. So there are two household products every family must have, should have. So baking soda, and both of them, by the way, are very inexpensive and readily available. Baking soda, which is the chemical name is sodium bicarbonate, and magnesium salt, which is Epsom salt. So baking soda first. Baking soda was a suggested product to diminish toxic poisoning when they had that Gulf disaster. It was so powerful. It was the very best treatment that they could have. And another thing is that when you first notice a foul smell or foul taste or flu-like symptoms, if you would just jump into a bath with several pounds of baking soda and Epsom salt, it'll wipe it out. So useful and strong is baking soda that is was used to clean soil contaminated with uranium. So the baking soda binds with uranium, separating it from the dirt. And it has removed as much as 92% of the uranium from contaminated soil samples. It treats yeast infections. Baking soda can remove paint, grease, oil, and smoke residue. It's a household cleaner. You can use it instead of scouring powder and without the suds or scratching, countertops and appliances. And it also brightens them. I've used it. It's a teeth brightener, by the way. Teeth brightener was used with peroxide. And when I told my dentist that I did not want to use the toothpaste that he recommended, the Ted Chloride, I said, what else would you suggest? And this is what he said. He said, it doesn't taste good. I said, I know, I'm familiar with it. Okay, so you can also use baking in your laundry. It gives you a fresh smell. Use about half the amount of Clorox you normally use, and then put in a half a cup of baking soda. Epsom salt. Epsom salt is really, really great. I mean, it is wonderful. It doesn't get as crap. After my pregnancy, I got up too soon, busy bee, working around the house, sleeping, tore my stitches off. The doctor could not do anything for me. He said it was too bad, and I had to suffer. But he did suggest that I just soak in some Epsom salt 20 minutes a day. And that's what I did, and hey, it got well. I was walking around like a duck, like these guys with their pants hanging down the duck.
It works. So
yes,
soothing.
It's soothing. As a relaxing Epsom salt, add one cup of Epsom salt to a warm bath and soak for 20 minutes. If you want to detox, then put two parts of Epsom salt to one part of baking soda and soak for a minimum of 30 minutes. And we've talked about that. That's a good detox. I use Dr. Teal's Relax and Release Eucalyptus and Spearmint. It's great.
What is that again? Say that again because I couldn't hardly hear you.
Okay. One cup Epsom salt to a warm bath and soak for 20 minutes. That's just as you just want to relax. For the detox, two parts of Epsom salt to one part of baking soda and soak for 30 minutes. and have the water as hot as you can stand, but not too hot. Not too hot. That's what I did the first time. Mm. Now, I use Dr. Teal's Relax and Release, Eucalyptus and Spearmint with essential oil. It's much better than getting just a plain Epsom salt. It's only like, you know, pennies more, but it's worth every penny because it has the oils in there. So, splinter removal. Soak in concentrated Epsom salt water to pull out a splinter. Better vegetables. Add a tablespoon of Epsom salt to the soil below a tomato plant to boost its growth. A facial wash. Add a pinch to your usual facial cleanser or your oil cleansing routine for a skin exfoliating magnesium boost. Towel grout cleaner. Mix equal parts of liquid dish soap and Epsom salt and use to scrub towel and grout. Rinse well for a streak-free shine. Body aches. Add 2 cups to a warm bath and soak for at least 20 minutes. It's the same as the relaxing. But it helps relieve muscle strain. And I did that last night, and I feel so much better today. I was a little worried. Water houseplants. Help houseplants grow by adding a couple of tablespoons of Epsom salt to the water when you water them. That's cool. Okay. Mm. But soak 1 cup to some hot water. Soak for 20 minutes. Let me tell
I
you.
Love
leave it
that.
Up to,
if
you do?
Soaked. Oh. Oh, yes.
Get
I
rid of
that.
Slugs. You can sprinkle some in your garden or patio if you have slugs. Try not to hurt the little creatures. Beautiful roses. Add a tablespoon of wheat to the soil around the rose bushes before watering for faster growth. Hey, rose growers. Mm. Headache relief. There's evidence that soaking in a soothing salt bath may help relieve headaches. It does. It does. Because I had an awful one yesterday. Smooth skin. We talked about that. Helps kids sleep better. Add a cup to kids' bath water before bed to help them sleep peacefully.
Wow. I did not know that. Helping children sleep.
Yes. So it is. It's two very good things to have. I try not to run out. All right, is everybody ready for your breathing? R&R, relax and release. Boy, we need to relax and release.
Yes, we do.
Maintain myself. Okay, so this is a breathing with body movement. We're going to move our body as we breathe. So, did you know, Black Rose, that exercising is better when you synchronize your breathing with your movement?
Yes.
Okay.
Because
so
I
the
practice
best way
Pilates.
To perform your exercise? Yes, right. It's less stress in your body and it's more effective. All right, let's begin. Sit in a comfortable position. Ideally, it would be good to sit on the floor, but if you can't do that, just sit in your chair with your feet flat on the floor and just roll your shoulders back. Exhale. Inhale and lift up your shoulders. Exhale and roll them back and down. And inhale, feel your breath in your abs. Exhale and expel all the air out with the help of contracting your abs. Breathe in and move your head slowly to the right. Take a deep breath. Inhale and move your head back to the center. Exhale. Inhale and move your head to the left. Exhale. Inhale and move your head to the center. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale and move your head to the back with your chin going up. And move your head back to the center. Exhale and drop your head to your collarbone. Exhale. And inhale and bring your head back to the center. Exhale and drop your head to your left shoulder. tuck in your chin. Inhale and bring your head back up. Exhale and drop your head to the left. Tuck in your chin. Inhale and bring your head back up. And take a deep breath. And thank you so much for participating in Featherlight's Pranayama exercise. Namaste.
Namaste. Thank you so much, Featherlight. I feel relaxed. I'm released. And I'm ready to relax even more. And we hope that you join us again on next Wednesday. Who do we have next Wednesday, Featherlight?
We have Jet Setter and King Noor. Ooh, intimate experts galore. Oh, my goodness, I can't wait. They're going to talk about they're going to talk about fantasies and bringing love back into lovemaking and answer questions you were always too timid to ask. And I'm just excited about this couple. I mean, and this will be good for the women, because women, we do tend to have fantasies we don't want to tell anybody ever, because we're ashamed. So tune in next week.
I'm a little shy about it. Yes, tune in next week, because I think she's going to focus on some sexual acts geared towards pleasing the woman.
Yes.
Pleasing the woman.
Like,
since
Texas
this is
loving.
The month for women.
Yes.
Super.
It's about me. Makes me happy and you'll be happy.
All right. Well, we will be back next week. So peace, good night, namaste. And may you have a prosperous rest of the week.